Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game.
Welcome in to another episode of Odd Man Rush, our second of the playoffs. Hope you're all having a great start to your week, wherever and however you may be listening to us across our great country or our great land. And sure, even those guys up north, we hope you, if you're tuning in, are enjoying the program as well. Maybe not so much if you live in Ontario, but we will get to that in just a moment. But before we do, I'm welcoming in Kyle Diesel. My name is Will Highland. Kyle, how's it going?
It's going all right. I'm loving this warm, sunny weather we're having here in Boston.
Yeah, this is honestly, like, I love the Stanley Cup playoffs, obviously because we're huge hockey fans and we breathe it, but also it coincides with, in my opinion, the best time of the weather calendar is when it starts to get warm and you're in May and June. Personally, I think May and June are like the best months of the year because it's not hot. It's not infested with tourists up here where I live. And you're usually getting out of school, and or at least you are when you were a kid. And it's great. And I'm a baseball coach too, so I love it for that reason. But when you have the Stanley Cup playoffs coinciding with amazing weather like this, it's perfect.
Agreed. Just grab a nice brewski, grab the lawn chair, put TV outside, and you're set.
You are set. That's very very accurate there. But you know who wasn't set? You know, the Toronto Maple Leafs weren't set for the first four games of the series. Then their victory in game two. And for those of you listening at home, we're going to dive right in. We're going to do a quick wrap on round one, and then we're going to dive into round two. But the Toronto Maple Leafs weren't set to open the series. They had a bad loss to the Bruins, 5-1, in game one. And then they snagged game two, but then game three and four, they were not up to their level offensively. And they really never returned to that level. In fact, they never scored more than, I believe, two goals after game two. So the Toronto Maple Leafs weren't offensively set up to play. And ultimately, that's what burned them, because even though they came back in the series and they had Bruins faithful all worried about another playoff collapse in back-to-back years, ultimately they showed themselves to be the losers and the collapsers themselves. You know, they didn't have a healthy offense. They didn't have production from their stars, really. I mean, Nylander showed up to play late in the game once he was in the series, but that was the problem. Matthews and Nylander didn't necessarily play together the whole series, except for really game seven, maybe game three. And then similarly, the goaltending situation for them, you know, they sort of did their job, and the Bruins didn't score a lot either. But they dinkered around with that. And I think Wall's injury hurt them in game seven. So Toronto Maple Leafs lose in seven games to the Boston Bruins for the fourth time in 11 years. And part of it, in my opinion, Kyle, is because of their offense not producing. What are your thoughts on their performance in round one?
I mean, I think overall, I mean, we thought this would be a high-powered offensive team like we saw all season with Austin Matthews having over 60 goals, or just under 60 goals, was it?
It was just under 70.
Just under 70. He missed that. He didn't get the last goal to get there. But it's just like we thought this was going to be a high-powered offense. We saw it all season. As we saw when they played the Bruins during the regular season, we saw that they would score it well. I actually thought their goaltending wasn't that bad in this series. I thought their goaltending is what kept them in, at least toward the end of the series, to keep them going. So I don't think that was the issue. I think your issue was Matthews going out, Nylander not starting the series. I get it. Injuries and sickness happen, but where's your captain? I didn't see Tavares step up at all and do.
Hey, he was a ghost.
At all. So it's like you're paying this guy. I guess I get it. He's a leadership. He's your captain. Tavares also played for the Islanders. He didn't have much success on the Islanders either, going far in the playoffs. But I also think it's a huge organization issue going on behind closed doors. I do think that they do need a rehaul in the entire front office organization to really revamp this team, because this team just looks completely, organization-wise, even as well, looks lost. The fans are all lost of what's going on there. So you can't really promote this team to get better until you figure out what the problems are. And that might just be, I don't say a hard reset, but some type of reset of bring in new players, new staff in general to help rebuild this team.
Yeah. I wonder about that. You know, we could do, like, everybody, I listened to a lot of people today to gearing up for this podcast, doing my research. The Leafs people, this is what they're talking about. So we could do a whole show on that, but we're going to have the summer to talk about the offseason and what needs to happen and trades and free agency and stuff. What I'm more concerned about is the Maple Leafs kind of knew what the Bruins were going to do, right? Like, mm-hmm. they knew that the Bruins were going to try and win these games 3-1, 2-1. And I was worried about that, if you remember our first pod, but I was worried about them playing close, low-scoring games, because this Toronto team is not the Toronto team of, like, 2021 or 20 before 2020 or 4 or 5 years ago, because they do play a better 200-foot game now. Mm-hmm. They are a better defensive team now. And for that reason, they were somewhat equipped to play the Bruins tight. And it wasn't like they thought the Bruins were going to come in and, you know, fly all over the ice. I mean, the Bruins had guys like James Van Riemsdyk and Justin Brazzo playing on their third line. I mean, those guys aren't fleet of foot, you know? So I think the Maple Leafs kind of knew what the Bruins wanted to do, and they adapted to it well as the series went on. The problem was Toronto just didn't get production out of anybody except Nylander and Knies, really, offensively speaking. I mean, I think McCabe had a goal in game 5. Matthews had a really good game 2. But outside of that, I mean, it was the Nylander show once he came back, and it was Knies flying around once in a while. Bertuzzi had flashes, but you're right, Tavares was a ghost. I think he had one series win with the Islanders, because if I'm not mistaken, he left there after 2018, and I believe they may have had a year where they won a round, but either way,
he's got his belt then.
He's paid. What were you saying?
As he's got, then if that's the case, he's only got two, one with Toronto and one with the Islanders.
Which, yeah, but that's the point. That's the problem with this core four that the Leafs have, is that they pay all these forwards like $440 million or something combined. Like, it's ridiculous. It's almost half the cap. And we've talked about that on this program before, but Tavares was a ghost, and Marner, he's the one who they all want on a platter up there in Ontario. And part of it's because that guy was a liability in the defensive zone. He was deferring. There was a chance, Kyle, on Saturday night where the Bruins hadn't yet tied the game. The Leafs had just taken a 1-0 lead off a Nylander goal. And then they have a really good offensive opportunity, and it's Marner passing to Joel Edmondson, a defenseman. You know, Marner needs to take that shot. And then in overtime, a lot of people are, you know, excusing Mitch Marner for this play in overtime, but Pasternak skated right by him. You know, like, for those of you who didn't watch, which I'm not sure much of our audience did not watch that game, but I'll just quickly say that Hampus Lindholm from the Bruins intentionally shot the puck off the boards on a cross-ice dump. And, like, it was clearly a dump and chase, and it probably would have been an icing if, actually, definitely would have been an icing the way they were calling it on Saturday night, if Lindholm had done that and Marner had tagged up and got down there. and beat Pasternak to the play. But he was just standing there expecting somebody else to do it. And then the next thing you know, you have Pasternak take it off the boards and dump it in for a game winner. So it's Marner. It's not just Tavares. It's Marner. And it's the whole situation up there is that those two out of your four best players were completely non-factors in this series.
I agree. Can't disagree with you on that one.
So that's the number one thing from the first round is that the Leafs had the Bruins in an uncomfortable situation. The Bruins had heard it. Trust me. I mean, I was thinking it. You had them. They played really well in game 5 and 6 defensively. You had the Bruins in a situation that they're not great in. Game 7 at home, the Bruins historically in my lifetime, led by Marchand and others, have not been great in that spot. And they had a lead with 7 minutes to go. And the Leafs just could not close. And the Bruins, I give them credit. Hampus Lindholm had heard it from a lot of people about his play, right? And he tied the game. Kyle, you were watching. When that game was tied, what were you thinking? Were you thinking the Leafs are going to choke? Or were you thinking this is going to overtime? What was going through your mind there when Lindholm tied it?
And ask our friend Pat, I told him, I think this game, first period, the way this game is going, we're definitely getting overtime. And just the way the game, like, both teams were playing defensively. They didn't want to lose. It wasn't like someone was trying to, I thought, wasn't trying to, like, go for the kill right away. It looked like they're both playing defensively to see who would make that first mistake, and that would be the game. And it played out exactly how I thought. Whoever made the first mistake, which was Leafs, the Bruins scored. But I didn't know if Toronto was going to be able to score again because the Bruins were just suffocating them in the defense, their own end. So then Toronto was able to get it and went to overtime. So watching it, I was like, I have no idea how this game's going to go. We might be going to 3 or 4 overtime, just how defensively played this game was. But like I said, the dump in took a lucky bounce there. Then just no hustle there for Pasternak to go in and just steal the puck. I mean, like you said, it takes all about effort. It's Game 7, you got to put it all on the line. So it's sad to see for Toronto fans, but great for Bruin fans to see just that. It just now it depends for the Bruins going to the next round. I know we talk about long series. Are they going to have enough rest going into a rested Panthers team that's probably hot going into the second round?
There's a question. Those are all valid points. I'll point out the effort there. And I actually thought overtime would be over fast because I saw a change in the team's desperation. I think you're correct that they didn't want to – nobody wanted to make the first mistake in a 0-0 game 52 minutes in. But 1-1 felt like a normal hockey game after that. And it felt like – both teams were trading chances. I mean, for crying out loud, Jeremy Swayman, if he's any other goalie in the league and he wasn't as dialed in as he was with 0.3 seconds left to still be paying attention, even though his team has possession or could have possession, there was a Carom that could have gone into end the season, right? And he had that wherewithal. So what I'll just say lastly about the Bruins, and then we can talk about them and the Panthers, is the will to win from Swayman in particular throughout all 6 games that he played was incredible. I think a lot of times we overemphasize the goalies in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Like when a goalie has a bad game, it's like, oh, we got to pull him. Or when a goalie... Or when a team is losing and it might not even be the goalie's fault, you say, oh, I got to pull him. And then when a team wins, you only focus on the goalie. But this is one of those rare situations, or you focus on the goal scorer. This is one of those rare situations where the Bruins do not win that series if Jeremy Swayman doesn't post a .950 save percentage. They don't, because the Leafs are too good offensively, right? Like, at the end of the day, you thought those guys were going to put it in the back of the net. And sure, when Nylander and Matthews are playing together in Game 7, finally, yeah, they put one back in the back of the net together. But beyond that, Swayman rose to the occasion, I thought. This is a guy who was on the ice in 2021 when they lost in Game 6 to the Islanders. He was on the ice in 2022 when they lost in Game 7 to the Carolina Hurricanes. And he was on the ice last year when they lost to the Panthers. He's been on the ice for 3 straight elimination games for the Bruins. And he was and for a 4th season in a row, he was there. And he rose to the occasion. So, sounds like they're going to start him tonight. You know, we'll know in like less than an hour. But you talk about the turnaround, Kyle, and the well-rested Panther team. I mean, they're going to be scary. They're going to be a tough out. But part of me just wonders, I mean, have they been sitting around for too long down there? They won in 5, right? So they're down. I mean, they didn't leave the state of Florida. They haven't left the state of Florida in, what, 3 weeks now? Because they had home games against the Leafs to end the year, I think.
Yeah,
correct. They haven't left the state of Florida. They went on a short little flight to Tampa for 2 games? I mean, there's something to be said for rest in the playoffs for sure, but there's also something to be said for momentum. The Bruins are riding a very emotional high right now, and they have belief. What do you make of that counter-argument?
I mean, to counteract that, I do, like I said, I think right now I think right now in the playoffs that we're seeing some of the best goaltending in some of the series. Like, I think Bob and Swayman are definitely going to probably be the 2 starters going into game 1 and probably will be for majority of the series. They're probably the 2 best right now, 2 hottest. Like I said, there's other hot goaltenders, but I think right now those 2 guys should be an interesting series. I mean, for me, I think the question comes down to is, can Swayman play as well as he did in this first round? Can he carry this momentum into the second round? Because we didn't see a high-powered Toronto offense that we thought we were going to get. Florida is definitely a high-powered offense. The question is Swayman going to be able to slow this down and stop it? Because I don't know if the Bruins have enough assets offensively to keep up with the Panthers if it starts to become a high shooting game, scoring game, if you know what I mean. That's the only comment I have against the Bruins right now. It's just, can they keep up and stop this high-powered offense there?
It's interesting that you say that, because like, it's sort of like the chicken or the egg. Like, were the Leafs not a high-powered offense in the 7-game series because Swayman had 950 save percentage? Because there were games where they shot over 30 times per game. I mean, there was, what was it, game 5? They had outshot the Bruins in the first period like 15-1.
Correct.
You know, so it's not like Swayman didn't face shots and he sort of skated through with, like, you know, his save percentage wasn't artificial, right? Like, it came from a lot of shots. So did he play well because they weren't good? Or as they're obviously not as good as Florida, I'll see that. But I'm just saying, like, We didn't see a Toronto high-powered offense in the series. Yes, I brought that up. But was that because Swayman rose to the occasion, or was that because Toronto missed their chances? If anything, the Bruins were the ones that missed a lot of offensive chances. But ultimately, semantics aside, I agree with you. This series is going to be incredibly hard, even if Swayman plays well. Because even if he gives you another 95% effort of saves, I mean, that still might not be enough, because Bobrovsky might give you 93, and if the Bruins shoot less than the Panthers do, which I would imagine they would, that puts you in another situation where you're going to be playing 1-1, 2-2 kind of games, and then in overtime anything could happen. So I mean, what do you think? Who do you think takes this series? I mean, I could talk all day about this series, but
I think it's gonna be to be honest, I think it's gonna be Panthers in 6 games. I just think they've got a really good top 6 wings/centers. They've got like top 6 guys, and I don't think the Bruins have enough, like I said, to keep up with that. Yes, I give the Bruins credit. I do think they did stop Matthews-Strom down, but they don't have as many weapons as the Florida Panthers.
Absolutely not. No,
which is what killed them. But also, Matthews didn't show up. Neither showed up late after they're missing the first 2 games. But excuses aside, I just think the Panthers just have taken that next step to basically take that division right now, I think.
Yeah, the only guys that would be on the top six in Florida might be Marchand and Pastrnak. Beyond that, I mean, DeBrusque isn't a top six player on that team. Coyle's not a top six player on that team. I mean, the best those guys would be on the Florida Panthers is what they were when Bergeron and Krejci and Hall were still here. Yeah, I agree. They don't have offensive depth. We saw that. Joe Wall, I will point out for Toronto, did do really well. But you're going to get that from Bobrovsky too. So it's going to be very similar. I would tend to agree with you. I think Panthers in six is fair. But, you know, Allmark also has really good numbers against the Panthers. I don't see the Bruins playing him that much, though. I think defensively, the Bruins' penalty kill is really good. But their Achilles heel is going to be depth scoring because it took Pastrnak until game seven in overtime to make an offensive impact on the series. Marchand, we saw it in 3 and 4, but we didn't see it that much otherwise. And then the rest of the team, DeBrusque, we saw it in game one. James Van Riemsdyk, we saw it in game one. But these guys aren't – they're not going to win you – the Bruins aren't going to win this series by winning games like they did last year, 5-3 or, you know. If you get into another 7-5 game like you had in game six last year with the Panthers, you're going to lose – you're going to get swept. So – I would probably say Panthers in 6-2. However, if you get another unconscious performance from Jeremy Swayman, I wouldn't rule out the Bruins winning the series. I give them a puncher's chance. Their defense, if their defense and goaltending rides the way it has and their penalty kill doesn't regress, I give them a puncher's chance to win this. It's just going to be an absolute all-out knockdown, drag-out, Pat Maroon shoving people in the corner kind of game every single night for 2 weeks. And I don't know if they can do that.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I just, like I said, I agree with you saying that. I don't know if they have the depth to go the distance with the Panthers. And that being said, if they keep it within the series, I think they got a shot. But if Panther goes up 3-1, 3-0, I don't see them bouncing back from a deficit of being behind by two goals or more, yeah, even the general in a game. I just don't see them having the firepower, as you said. I mean, it could be the spark for him. Who knows? This could be the spark, but it's just going to be tough to keep up if Panthers just start wailing on Swayman, unfortunately.
I think you're right 100%. And also, the way this is going, you know, I don't see a situation where if the Bruins don't get out of Florida this week with at least one win, I think they got a split down there to make this a series. If they go down 2-0 in the series, that's a huge mountain to climb. They've won four against out of four times. Twice in overtime, I think, and twice in regulation. Maybe three times in regulation, once in overtime, something like that. I know there's an OT win in there, but they're 4-0 against the Panthers this year, and they were 4-0 against the Maple Leafs this year. And the Bruins, for, you know, they've been inconsistent offensively all year long. But one thing they haven't been inconsistent about is rising to the occasion against good teams. We'll see if that's true in the playoffs. It was sort of true against Toronto for the first few games, and they had to fight for it. But I think the Bruins have to win one this week in Florida. And then I think if they get to a game five and it's 2-2, it's anybody's series. Speaking of anybody's series, Kyle, what about the series that has already begun in round two in the Eastern Conference, which is Carolina and the Rangers? Now, Mika Zibanejad had an amazing game yesterday, gives the Rangers the 1-0 win. This is very interesting for me because it's my Stanley Cup pick from last season versus my Stanley Cup pick from this season. And I still think the Hurricanes, top to bottom, are the best team in the league. I changed my mind. Their goaltending scares me at times, especially, you know, Zibanejad could have had a hat trick yesterday. But I I'm having a hard time coming off of my thought that the Hurricanes are going to win the cup. So I'm a little bit married to that idea, but we'll get to your cup pick in a second. What is your big picture thought on Hurricanes and Rangers?
I mean, I said it even on the last podcast. I just like the Rangers so much. They were just so dominant this year. Like, Shesterkin's playing out of his mind right now for goaltending. And as you know, one of your favorites, Jonathan Quick, is also playing out of his mind this year. So, like, they've got a great duo. Adding Rempe, I think, to this team has just changed their entire flow of the game, their entire mindset. It's just seeing them go to a different level. This is the Ranger team we were expecting last year, but we didn't get. This is the Ranger team that should have been, who almost won the Stanley Cup 2 years ago, back to where they are now, to where they should be running basically the East with probably Florida, would probably be the other team, and the Hurricanes. I just, like you said, I'm worried about the Canes' goaltending. We were always shaky on it, and I think that's might be their only downfall right now is goaltending. Yes, Carolina does probably have a better defensive lineup versus the Rangers, but at the end of the day, whoever's the hotter goaltender in the playoffs, as we've seen, is a team that's going to go far.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on the Rangers and how scary they are. I mean, they look like the whole package right now. Offensively, they're scary with those guys. They got great goaltending. Adam Fox, Lindgren.
Truba.
What was that?
Truba.
Truba, right. I didn't even get to him yet. I mean, they have that thing there too, like that crowd and the home ice advantage they have. They're a scary team. The one thing, though, I think about with them is they weren't really tested by the Capitals, like, at all. And this is sort of my thing with Florida. Florida was at least tested by a veteran group in Tampa that pushed, and they won a game, but, like, Ovechkin, I don't think, did he even have a point in those four games? I mean,
have a single point. I think he only had like two or three shots the entire
series.
Yeah,
I mean, he was a non-factor, and that team was a playoff accident. I bet if you're the Penguins or, you know, the Devils or somebody else, you're thinking to yourself, maybe we could have given them a harder push. So that's my one thing about the Rangers this year. And it's not like Carolina was put to the brink of elimination by the Islanders, but I just thought the Islanders pushed them a little bit more. You had those games where I think it was Brock Nelson tied the game late or something like that, and they had to, the Carolina Hurricanes had to scramble to win one of those games, and they did. You know, I feel like Carolina was just a little bit more tested in this playoff environment, and I also just feel like they're due. I mean, the Rangers, sure, last year we thought they were going to be good, and then this year they are really good. But it feels like the Hurricanes have been sitting there for like 4 or 5 years now, just ready to pop. And they brought in guys who have sort of been around the block a little bit, like Brent Burns. And yeah, Slavin. Slavin had a goal last night. So if you had to make me pick, I'd probably just, you know, dance with the girl I brought and go with the Hurricanes, but I would not be bent over surprised if the Rangers just go on this epic run like I expect them to a year ago. I wouldn't at all.
Would you be surprised, or would you consider it to be tested if, hypothetically, they did sweep the Canes or beat them in five games? Would you be surprised at all?
I would be surprised. I don't think they're going to win in five. I think they'll win. I think they might win in six, because I think once they get to rally, speaking of home ice crowds, that crowd for a hockey market, they've developed well. They were a transplant franchise from Connecticut, but they've developed a really solid fan base down there, and that building is a really hard place to play in Raleigh. So I'd like to think that the Hurricanes will grab a couple at least to make it a series, even if the Rangers win. But I still got to dance with the girl I brought. I think I would be surprised. I think I would. The Hurricanes just they play a really good 200-foot game. Their goaltending, I'm not in love with Freddie Anderson or any of these other guys that they trot out there once in a while. But the way they responded, even in defeat yesterday, I would be surprised. And if the Rangers move on and they play the Panthers, let's say, and they've only played 10 games, and then the Panthers have only, let's say they beat the Bruins at five. I would hate that, but let's just say that happens. And then you have both teams that haven't played more than 9 or 10 games. I think they'd be poised to take on whoever wins in the West, right? Because in the West, let's actually move over to the West, Kyle. It's a gauntlet over there. I
Oh
mean,
my
in the
gosh.
past, the East has sort of been the gauntlet, but I think this year it's somehow become the West. It's going to be a barn burner in both of those series we have, but let's start with the Canadian teams up there. And then we'll end with your situation that went wrong. The Oilers take care of the LA Kings. I think it's clear the LA Kings need a goaltender and they need more scoring. And then the Canucks take care of an upstart Preds team despite some goaltending injuries. What do you make of the Canucks, the Oilers, McDavid, all the superstars, this Western Canada throwdown that we have going on?
This might be the series that we actually see a sweep in, just because the Oilers right now, McDavid has changed his game style to being more of a playmaker than a scorer. Not saying he's not one of the best goal scorers, he still is, but he's literally doing everything for this team to help him win. And what they have done, this might be the greatest. If they go on to win the Stanley Cup, this might be the greatest comeback for a team ever to be out of the playoff contentions by like what, November, and then come back and be a potential contender.
I mean, St. Louis was last in the league in January of 2019, and then they beat the Bruins in seven games. So I would still put that up there. But yeah, Edmonton had that amazing, what was it, month of December where they won like what, 15 in a row or something wild like that.
Crazy after firing their coach too, so I think they're poised to go potentially far. I do like their goaltending has done better. Like more, I'm more concerned about Vancouver. Like watching them play against Nashville made me scratch my head a lot. Like this was supposed to be a this is the number one seed, top dominant team, and they had a hard time putting the puck in the net against the Nashville team that also seemed to struggle offensively. And it was just like I won't say a barn burner. It's just to me, it just kind of got boring a bit. It just didn't look like hockey the way it should be, the way they were playing toward the final stretch in that series. It just didn't look good for Vancouver. I
I
thought
think
they're.
Vancouver skated by, obviously literally, but figuratively too. It felt like the Predators were sort of there, but not really there. And I don't really think Vancouver stepped on their throats. Obviously, they had the goaltending situation, and I don't know what to make of Demko. Is he healthy? Is he not? I didn't stay up and watch a lot of those games because a lot of them were on super late. But Vancouver has, they have tools, right? Like, I like their lines. I like Hughes on their defense. I like Pedersen or Pedersen, however you pronounce his name. I like JT Miller and Garland and all those guys. They have a good roster, and I'm glad they're a playoff team and that they're relevant because if Vancouver is relevant, that's really good for the sport because that's a huge hockey hotbed. However, as you pointed out, Edmonton is a different Edmonton team. You talk about the Leafs being like the same Leafs team in terms of end result. Didn't
Correct.
matter that they changed the way they played, they still end up losing the Bruins in seven. Edmonton, to your point, has changed the way they played this year. They're a much more balanced team. And in the games they played against the Bruins that I watched, those games were very close and they were very physical. But they were also still filled with a lot of speed. And so that mix of physicality and speed that they're now bringing to the table that they hadn't in years past, that could be the reason that gets them past the conference finals and through this round too. And so you're absolutely right. They have the best player in the world. They have probably the third or fourth best player in the world as well. And and they're right there. But the problem is Vancouver has home ice, right? So, correct. I mean, they're gonna get the second change. Vancouver's gonna be able to match themselves up against McDavid and Draisaitl or whoever they want when they want for four out of these seven games. But if you think it's gonna be a sweep, I personally don't. I would say Oilers in six. I think Vancouver will grab a few games. They'll catch lightning in a bottle with one of these goaltenders who just has a wild night. But I'm with you. I think the Oilers, I mean, it could be fun for them.
Yeah, we'll have to see how the first two games go to really see how the series plays out. If Vancouver, if they go 1-1, I still give it to Edmonton. If Vancouver goes 0-2, I think the series is over.
Yeah. With any of these road teams, if you can split in the first two games, you change the series. I mean, look, if the Bruins had beaten the Maple Leafs in the first two games and then gone there, it's a completely different series for Toronto. Sure, they're coming home, but they have to now do what? Win at least one here to make it a series, right? And then you go back and now you got to win. You know, it still then sort of ended up that way because they couldn't take advantage of the home ice. But just imagine if they hadn't, right? You know, you think about the home ice. Like, what if Toronto had home ice in Game 7 after grabbing that lead back or forcing a Game 7 and then you force a Game 7 at home? It makes a world of difference. So it would be interesting for the Oilers, since they're playing on the road, if they split in Vancouver and split at home. Then you look at game five up there in Edmonton and you wonder, oh, okay, now it's suddenly a must win for those guys. But you don't think it's going to go that far. So we'll see. All right. Speaking of not going far, Kyle, what happened to your Knights? I really want to know. I watched a little bit yesterday, but that was a team that they did not take advantage. They lost Dallas. Didn't Dallas lose the first two at home?
Yeah, they lost the first two.
Vegas did not step on the throat.
No, they didn't decide to put them away. They let them. They kept the door on a crack. Then opened it wide open. They just didn't look fluent. The Vegas Knights just didn't look fluent. Yes, they got a lot of new players, not a lot of chemistry. They also had a lot of injuries. Not making excuses for them, but like as you saw, I mean, they stood. But Dallas, I give Dallas all the credit. As we said, if Dallas could beat this team, they might be the team in the West because they went and pushed the Stanley Cup champions out of the playoffs. So, I mean, I give more credit to Dallas than I do to Vancouver losing because they traded for a lot of assets. But it's not like they didn't decide to show up and play. Like, each game was super close and competitive. Besides, I think game six when it was 2-0, I think that's the only other one. Besides that, it was either one or two goal games. So this series was close. And I wasn't expecting this kind of comeback from Dallas. So it makes me wonder if Dallas might be a team to now finally compete in the West. Because last time, I believe, it was the last year when they played the Avs, they also went to seven games.
I think so. I think those two have had a lot of playoffs against one another in recent years. And I mean, they are 4 years away from 4 years removed from winning that Western final in the COVID bubble year. So it's not like Dallas hasn't been there. I mean, Jamie Benn and Sagan and those guys have been there. Ottinger played that really strong series against Calgary 2 years ago, but they ended up losing in seven that year in the first round. That was a heartbreaker for them. So they have been through – a lot of that group has been through this before. So I do give Dallas a lot of credit for not being scared of the moment. I think that's where home ice means a lot. It's interesting you probably heard Mark Stone's comments today saying, I wish we could have taken care of business in the regular season. And he was referring to getting home ice.
Yes.
I don't think that was Vegas' problem because they won the first two on the road. That was weird to me. And then the other thing it was weird for him to say is that it's because he wasn't really a participant in the regular season. But I think for Vegas, Bruce Cassidy is comfortable in a really hard-fought series. He plays the refs. He plays the media well. But I just wonder about motivating that team. You know, like, a lot of those guys that they brought in, like they brought in Hurdle and Hanifin. They weren't part of that team that won. You know, and then you have Marchessault and Chandler Stephenson, who are going to be free agents. And then I wonder about guys like Jack Eichel, who can be considered one of the best ever, if not the face of that franchise for the rest of his career, if he wins multiple cups there after coming in. And then he has two and McDavid has zero. You know what I mean? Like all that goes into that. There seemed like there was a lot of meat on the bone for the Vegas Golden Knights and that they were motivated, but I wonder what sort of mental stuff they ran into in that series. Like did they think they had it after 2-0? Like I don't know. Like I'm very shocked that they didn't close that out and Dallas forced a game seven. That's one of those situations where, as I was alluding to earlier, you force the game seven on the road. Suddenly you're playing game seven at home. It's like the best feeling in the world. So I think that's what happened to Dallas. I think they got in a situation where they gained some confidence. They said, look, we got this defending cup champions on the ropes in our building in game seven in a situation they really weren't in last year that I can remember. Take care of them.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I was watching game seven and just Dallas was all Dallas and basically to start the first period. And that's when they scored their first goal and take the lead. It was just that they just, the Stanley Cup champs did not look like the Stanley Cup champs. They just did not look as fluent as they did.
Yeah.
As they so.
And I wasn't in love with the Stars depth throughout the regular season. We talked about this a lot when we were doing our power rankings. We always kind of had them in the conversation, but I mean, I always thought they were a team with some really young stars, no pun intended, some really old stars, and then a decent goalie who can be really, really good, if not the best in the league, so maybe better than decent. But I thought they were kind of thin on the depth department, and I mean, I was proven wrong. I think Robertson played well. I think the whole team played well down the stretch. And obviously, they got off to that 0-2 start in the series, but it didn't phase them. So we've seen that happen to teams before. The Bruins in 2011, they start out 0-2 at home. They end up winning a game seven at home, getting back in the series, and it propels them to something even greater. Now, is that greater challenge? Can they beat the Colorado Avalanche? Because I still have the Avalanche making the West Final. Well, I think the Avalanche are the sneakiest team in the league. Nobody talks about them. You go out West, where'd we start? We started with Edmonton. Now we're talking about Dallas. You go out East, people are talking about the Florida or New York, Carolina. No one's talking about the Avalanche. They aren't that far away from being a cup champ yourself. Do you think they win this series against the Stars?
This is so tough. I mean, I do think that Colorado does have this. I think Nathan MacKinnon is probably the MVP of the year. I do think he is taking this game to the next level. So I think him and then all the assets Colorado brought in this year, their goaltending has been stellar and everything else. So I do think Colorado can. But the question is, do they have the depths that compete with this Dallas team is what the big question is. Can they?
I think they do.
So we'll find out. I think it will go seven. I do think it's going to be Colorado. But if Dallas does win, I might just have to pick Dallas in the Stanley Cup Finals. If they beat Colorado, I think they're the team to be a little bit the dark horse to worry about.
Yeah. It's great because the thing about these teams in the West is you get an amazing Western Canada rivalry. Now, selfishly, it would have been cooler if it was the Calgary Flames and the Edmonton Oilers, but it ends up being Vancouver and Edmonton. That would have been great either way. But you get that great rivalry. Then the winner, we think it's going to be Edmonton. Then they play teams that have had their number in the postseason in the past, like the Stars and the Avs, and that's a good opportunity for McDavid. But then you also have the Avalanche, who are saying, hey, don't forget about us. And so out west, you have this great gauntlet of teams that it's going to be interesting because Vancouver was in the President's Trophy driver's seat for much of the year. And now they're the team that, if you had to pick one in the West that you're least confident about, it's probably them. And then meanwhile, in the East, the Bruins were in the President's Trophy driver's seat for a lot of the year as well on the Eastern side. But then the Rangers and the Panthers ascended. And now a lot of people will say that the Bruins are the team they feel the least confident about in the Eastern Conference. And it will remain to be seen. You have the Panthers winning in six. Do you have the
Yep.
Rangers in five or six?
I'm gonna go Rangers in. I think they're gonna put the Canes away. I think they're gonna put them in five.
All right, so you have that, you have those two teams advancing, and then you have the, do you have the Vancouver Canucks getting swept?
Yes, I have the Canucks getting swept by the Oilers, and then I have the Avs going 2-7. We're going to set up for one of the best hockey matches, like two of the best players in the league, MacKinnon versus McDavid for the
I would
Western
love
Conference.
that. That's what I have. I have Avs in seven. I have Oilers in six. That matchup will be amazing.
When you put that, think of that perspective, just throw goaltending out the window. We're probably going to be, I'm thinking we're like,
I mean, Georgiev and Jack Campbell or whatever his name is up there. I forget their goalie. Just take a
five.
seat.
Like, I'm just seeing this game just going fast pace all the way through. I do think defensively they'll harden down, but those guys alone just make their team so much better. So I don't know what this team is built for speed and offense. I don't know what we'll expect, but first they got to get through the second round.
Agreed, agreed. Yeah, let's not get too ahead of ourselves here. But then you have in the East,
I got four.
who would you have advancing in this situation? You have Rangers and you have Florida Panthers.
Yep.
Who's advancing to the Stanley Cup in that? We'll talk about it.
Well, in the first round, I had already predicted that the Rangers would make the Stanley Cup Finals.
Okay, so you're sticking with that. All right.
Sticking
All
with
right.
it.
So here's my thing. All right. I'll say Panthers and Hurricanes. I say Hurricanes still make the Stanley Cup final. I'm sticking with that. My pick is still live out west too, so I'm picking Avs getting there. But here's the matchup I want to see. I want to see, just selfishly, I want to see Bruins. I want to see Canucks. I want to see a throwback to 2011. And I just want chaos. I just want that's what I want to see. It's the least likely to happen, according to a lot of people, because those are the teams that no one's confident in. But that's what I want to see. I want to see a 2011 throwback. Unless that guy out joins the Bruins,
Tim
maybe
Thomas.
they have that guy. Maybe Swayman is that guy this year. To those of you listening, I'm pointing my Tim Thomas jersey. It might not get that interesting unless you have Tim Thomas in the series chirping everyone and Roberto Luongo chirping everyone. Don't forget, Thatcher Demko, if he gets healthy again, he didn't give Jeremy Swayman a hug at the All-Star game. It's not his job to pump his tires. All right. Nice little 2011 throwback for you. But anyway, what is the matchup that you want to see the most?
Man, this is tough. I mean,
Like as a fan, not like, oh, this is what I think, but like as a fan, now that your Knight Golden Knights adopted team are out.
that? This is tough. I mean, I kind of want to see. I want to say probably right now, the comeback team. I want to see the Oilers come back and play the Rangers. Like,
That
you've
would be
watched.
amazing.
Watching the most high, probably besides probably the Panthers, I would say probably one of the best overall built teams right now, the Rangers versus this Oilers team that came out of nowhere, the best player.
Well, no, okay, they didn't come out of nowhere. They had the two best players in the world, arguably, on their
Yeah,
team.
sorry. We'll have
But
the best
yes.
world versus probably the best goaltender in the world go at it.
Yeah,
Who's
that would be epic. That
who's
would be
better?
epic. That would be great for the league too, because you get the whole country of Canada, whether you live in Fort McMurray or Halifax, you'd be rooting for the Oilers. And
Kind of
then you'd
style,
have New York, which is like the big bad, Rangers fighting each other. That would be amazing. I agree.
Yeah, I'm thinking like hockey franchises, like besides Boston, that'd probably be the closest next team. I don't think Florida or Hurricanes are at the Rangers or Boston.
No, the original six, you'd have two original six, or you'd have an original six team in the Rangers, and then you'd have probably the most historic team in Canada outside of Montreal, in my opinion, in terms of history and winning, it's the Oilers, and you'd have them playing in the Stanley Cup. That would be incredible.
For our generation, you could say it's like the Patrick Waugh versus the Wayne Gretzky of our era.
Ooh, I like that. I like that. Wow, we can't end it on a much better note than that. We will see. Bruins and Panthers drop puck in about 6 minutes. We're recording on Monday night for those of you who want to timestamp our predictions and remind us when we're wrong. But we will catch you after round two. No matter what happens, there will be tears, there will be joy, there will be sorrow, but there will also be great playoff hockey. Until then, my name is Will Hyland. We have Kyle Diesel. You've been listening to Odd Man Rush. If you liked this podcast, please subscribe on your favorite provider, including Spotify, Apple, Google, and Stitcher. Be sure to also check us out 2 times a week on those platforms, on Monday and on Thursday. All of the Sportland USA programs are independent, and the opinions expressed in them do not reflect those of any other company, outlet, person, or entity.